Good morning. Either this pulpit has shrunk or I've gotten taller, one or the other. It is good to be here. There's only a couple things I miss as a retired Methodist minister. One is preaching and leading worship and being able to pick the hymns you like to sing. And the other is children's time in church, and I really enjoyed that. I know you did. As Tracy asked the question, what do you do when you get nervous? And there were a lot of really interesting answers. It reminded me of a seminary class I had in preaching. And the first day, the professor said, when you're standing in front of a congregation and you're feeling really nervous, what can you do to ease the tension and kind of relax? And one of my classmates, in all seriousness, raised his hands and said, well, you can just stand there, look at your congregation, and visualizing them sitting there naked. I'm telling you, it doesn't work. It's been 11 years, and it's good to be back to see some old friends. I especially want to express my appreciation to Pastor Steve for the courage and the invitation to invite a retired fellow to come back and preach. It's especially meaningful today. I did not realize that John and Marianne were moving, so it's very special. They were an important part of this congregation, and I really enjoyed the youth, and particularly Monica and Dory. The energy that all of these young people who were here bring to the church. And those of you who complain about babies crying and youth talking, you don't know what you're talking about. Be grateful for the youth and the young people who bring vitality and life to our church. And it's especially grateful. Later on, we're going to be honoring the memory of Kathy Hamilton. And in all churches, there are pillars, and the Hamiltons have been a pillar of this church. And I still remember Kathy every day. I'd walk in wherever I was, and she would get up and greet me with a smile and a kind word. And she is missed but not forgotten. And, of course, Shirley Hamilton is still running around this morning doing things that she's been doing for the last 35 years. Thank you, Shirley. You and your family have been a blessing to me and to this church. Thank you again. As you know, Steve is not here because the annual conference is in session, and when you're retired, you don't have to go all the time, so that's sort of nice. But I was out there for the clergy session, and it's a rather long meeting in which we talk about clergy matters, and it's kind of boring. So I tend to let my mind wander, and I got to thinking and reflecting on 28 years, or actually 38 years of ministry, thinking about the joys and those high moments of ministry. And I realize and remember those things that I celebrate that brought joy: leading worship and preaching, vacation Bible school, youth lock-ins and youth mission trips. Also those moments when I had the opportunity to be in people's lives at moments of great joy and even great sorrow: baptisms, marriages, confirmations, children running around the church, death and memorial services, celebrations of life. And I realized that in 38 years, I was blessed. And this congregation and you have been an important part of that. But then I began to think about the frustrations and the stresses of 38 years of ministry. And fortunately, there are more joys than frustrations, but there are really only two. And I think most clergy, if they were honest, would probably agree with me. One is the endless number of meetings that Methodist ministers are subjected to. I pick up the oak leaf and I look in the middle section with a monthly calendar and I look at all those meetings and I can't understand why Pastor Steve is still walking around. As one of my Presbyterian colleagues likes to tell me, you Methodists sure know how to do meetings well. And we do. The other thing that I don't miss, and the frustration was in all churches, are church politics in general and difficult people in particular. And I know that in all fairness, that in all my churches, there are parishioners who are saying, yes, and you've been a difficult pastor. And that's true. They're right. And so it's interesting that the other day, I was coming across an article about an organization that was founded about 5 years ago. And this is true. You can go on YouTube and find it. And it's an organization that was founded that's called Choirs for Complainers. Honestly, the idea is simple. People are invited to list the things that irritate them, hire a local musician to convert those complaints into lyrics, and set them to music. And what you then have is a choir and band bellowing their beefs together. Example, I did 3 years. Sounds like it was work. I went to seminary for 3 years back in Chicago area. And so I like Chicago. It's a beautiful city. And there's a chapter of the Choirs for Complainers in Chicago, and they put together this song. Those of you who like Chicago will appreciate this. It's called Chicagoland, Chicagoland. Sounds like we live in an amusement park. We don't want the Olympics here. Only tourists like deep dish pizza. I hate drunken Cub fans, but I hate drunken Cardinal fans more. Now, these complaint choirs are not limited to the United States. There are chapters in Australia, Germany, Canada, Korea, Singapore, Finland, Russia, and many other places. Go on the internet if you don't believe me. The idea for these complaint choirs began in Finland with a couple by the name of Oliver and Talero Kacha-Kellin. And the reasoning behind forming complaint choirs was based on a belief that a lot of the things that people complain about could not be achieved. And a lot of things we do complain about can't be alleviated. So the complaint choirs became a way of letting off steam. It was a way of turning bitterness into ballads and howling into harmonies. Now, complaint choirs are not new. They existed in the Old Testament. The Israelites probably were the first complaint choir that we know of. Remember in the wilderness, after Moses had led them out of Egypt, the Israelites gave in to complaining. They complained about lack of food and water. They complained about the heat. They complained about the living conditions. They complained about moving into some unknown future. After all that Moses had done for them, all they could do was complain. Now, if complaint choirs had been around in the New Testament, certainly the Apostle Paul had earned the right to be a director of a complaint choir. But it's clear that that was not his intent. In the morning text, which Vic read a few moments ago, Paul lists a litany of personal challenges, complaints, if you will. He talks about his afflictions and hardships, about beatings, imprisonments, riots, sleepless nights, and hunger, but to name a few. But Paul lifts up these personal challenges not to earn sympathy or just to vent, which is what most of us like to do when we complain. Rather, Paul lifts up these personal challenges to make the point that reconciliation and a relationship with God is so important that it's worth whatever cost it takes to deliver. Interestingly, Paul affirms that the adversities that he has endured has not made him bitter, but rather led him to a rich and abundant life, a life of integrity, patience, knowledge, kindness, and so on. And he lists those. Do you hear what Paul is saying in the text this morning? That the adversities and struggles of life do not have to defeat us. They can make us stronger. And the power of Paul's life is that his litany of troubles was a way of boasting about the power of God in his life. I think what Paul is saying to us in the text this morning, paraphrased, is this. Look at all the things that could derail and defeat us, would have railed and defeated us, had not God been with us. But it's easy, and it's human nature to complain, isn't it? And there's a sense in which complaining can be constructive. Complaints can be a prod to drive us to fix problems, situations, or help us to do a better job in sharing the gospel. And if we take time to think about things people complain about, we often learn something about what they value. But too often, within the church and outside the church and in all organizations, complaints can become excuses and divide people and communities. So I would like to take a look this morning at how complaining can be an obstacle or an opportunity to sharing the good news of God. And I'd like to lift up two thoughts for your consideration. The first is this. I think that we need to put our complaints and our complaining in a proper context. We can all find things to complain about, can't we? I was sitting over there in that little heat zone with all the heat coming in, thinking, why can't the trustees do something about this so guest preachers don't have to be sunbathed in the morning? It's just nature to give in to complaints. And it's always easy to find people who will listen to our complaining. But will you note, Paul sets his complaints in the context of what is accomplished. Paul's complaints are not a rehashing of what has been or what has been done to him. He is always looking for the opportunity to use the current struggles to further the work of the building of God's kingdom. And it is clear that Paul does not see his faith as some kind of guarantee that his life will be free of hardship. To the contrary, Paul expected to be tested. But Paul understood and believed in his faith, and that his faith guaranteed him that God was with him in the struggles. So what we can learn from Paul is to keep the things we complain about in perspective and look each day at how we in our faith can change the colors of our lives. I like the poet Maya Angelou. At one point she writes this. She says, if you don't like something, change it. If you can't change it, change your attitude. Don't complain. It's true. Attitude is everything. I reminisce a lot now that I'm retired, but I remember my first church. I was an associate pastor at First Methodist Church of Huntington Park. I got there on July 1st, fresh out of seminary. The senior pastor decided to go on vacation for 6 weeks and leave me in charge. Boy, is that a scary idea. I remember the first day I went to make hospital calls. They don't teach you to make hospital calls in theological seminaries. You learn about theology and ethics and everything else, but they don't teach you how to make hospital calls. And I went to this hospital to see two people. The first person I saw was a man in his middle 40s, very successful, very well off. He had everything. He was there for some minor procedure, and I sat with him for 25, 30 minutes, and all he did was complain about the hospital and the food, about his people who worked for him, and about his church. He complained about everything. And I sat there and listened, and I had a prayer with him, and in my heart I was praying, Lord, help me not to become like this man. And I left that hospital room wondering if I'd really made the right decision. But then I walked into the room, an 82-year-old woman by the name of Marjorie. She was hooked up. She had fallen and broken a hip or a leg, and she was in traction, and she had all these pulleys. And I listened to her. She didn't talk much about herself. I found out that she had been in the hospital in the last 10 years about four times for broken bones. She never, ever talked about her physical ailments. She wanted to know about me. She asked about my school and my life and my family and what I like to do in the church. We sat there for almost 45 minutes. I didn't want to leave. She had this sense of joy that this brought everything into perspective. I left that hospital feeling like, you know, this is the right calling. Two people that day that I saw. One, a successful man who had no right to complain, but he did. An 82-year-old woman who had every right in the world to complain for all that she'd been through, but she didn't, because she had what Paul talked about, the fruits of the Spirit, patience and love and gentleness and kindness. Attitude makes a difference. You know, there's so much bad news when you turn on the TV or watch the newspaper that sometimes you just don't want to do it. But every once in a while, there's something that happens in life that puts everything in perspective for me. And I'm a baseball fan, and Tina's leaving because she's got a bad, bad, bad cough, not because I'm preaching, so don't feel bad about that. We don't want rumors starting, right? I love baseball, but there's a story about 10 days ago that just has meant so much to me and some of you. Armando Galarraga is the pitcher for the Detroit Tigers. He was pitching a perfect game against, I think it was Cleveland. Bottom of the ninth inning, two outs, the last play of the game, ball hit to the second baseman, he runs, Galarraga catches the ball. Everybody saw it was an out, but the umpire, Jim Joyce, called him safe. All the managers and all the players started screaming and yelling, except Armando Galarraga. And the thing that's etched in my mind is the look on his face after the umpire had called himself. He had this sort of wry grin, simply took the ball, went around and back to the mound. After the game, Jim Joyce viewed the videotape and realized he made a mistake and was crestfallen. Said, I cost that kid a no-hitter. He asked to see Galarraga, and they met. Jim Joyce asked for forgiveness. On a major stage, a major world event, a man had the courage to ask for forgiveness. But what impressed me even more was the response of Armando Galarraga. He had every right to complain. He would have pitched a perfect game and gone down in history, like few people could. But I think he will be remembered more for what he did than a no-hitter. Everywhere I go now, we had a family reunion yesterday, and everybody who don't even like baseball were talking about Armando Galarraga. At annual conference, they were talking, and in a grocery store. I don't know if Jim Joyce and Armando Galarraga are Christians or men of faith. I don't really matter. But you know what? They had a tremendous witness about the power of attitude. Galarraga had a right to complain, but he didn't. He chose to do a different thing. I don't know about that, but I know that each of us have the same opportunities. We're not going to pitch no-hitters. We're not going to be in famous situations. But each and every day we have opportunities to see adversity as an obstacle or an opportunity. The first thing is we need to put our complaints and complaining in proper perspective, and that takes attitude. The second and final thing I want to say this morning is this. I think that faith empowers us to live each day with gratitude. I believe that the real power of Paul's life and witness is that in spite of all that he endured, he could live each day with a sense of gratitude and victory. Melody Beattie puts it this way, gratitude unlocks the fullness of life. It turns what we have into enough and more. It turns denial into acceptance, chaos into order, confusion to clarity. It can turn a meal into a feast, a stranger into a friend, a house into a home. Gratitude makes sense of our past, brings peace for today, and creates a vision for tomorrow. My brothers and sisters, when you and I live each day with an appreciative heart, then the power of our thanks living puts all of our struggles and complaining in a proper perspective. And each of us have our own struggles, don't we? Our own disappointments, our own complaints. And whether or not we have a right to complain, I don't think that carries very much weight with God. There's a wonderful example in the Old Testament. I love the story about how Elijah, after confronting the king and prophets of Baal, finds himself on the run. He's emotionally drained and finds refuge in a cave. When God comes to Elijah and asks him what he's doing there, Elijah, of course, like the Israelites, complains. And God hears Elijah out, hears all his complaints, but does not offer one word of comfort to Elijah. Instead, what does he do? He gives Elijah more work to do. And you and I can complain all we want to God, and God will probably listen. But like Elijah, I have a hunch that God listens and gives each of us more work to do. I close with this. One of my favorite short quotations goes like this. You've heard it here before. Two prisoners looked out through prison bars. One saw the darkness, the other the stars. And that's how it is with us, isn't it? We can see our disappointments, our irritations, our failures, our struggles as an obstacle, an annoyance. Or we can see it as an opportunity to grow in our relationship to our Creator, as we live after the example and in the spirit of the risen Christ. We can complain or we can sing. We can see the darkness or we can see the stars. So be it, and amen.